Okay, Mary.
Okay, thank you. I'm not used to sitting on panels like this and just spouting off, so I'm going to use my notes and forgive me. What I would like to say to you is I'm principal of a grant-maintained integrated school, which means that the school was started by parents who passionately felt they wanted their children to be educated together and didn't want to be forced into sending them to the local maintained or controlled school. So it has been integrated from day one as a result of a lot of years of hard work from the parents. Okay, so when I prepared this, I took your little bit about giving the current governance and I've tried to address it through it. So I feel that if we are going to achieve a shared and inclusive education system in Northern Ireland, we have to start by acknowledging the hurt and the pain that some members of both communities have suffered, the painful history of this island and the impact this has had on society here, and the additional impact of all of this on our education system, which, if there is honesty, is a segregated system. We need to do our best to ensure that those leading the process towards the creation of a shared and inclusive education system do so in an inclusive manner, with a focus on and a sensitivity to the needs of the entire community, including all the marginalised groups, all the small groups, and not just those served by the power bases of the education library boards and CCMS, i.e. the controlled and the maintained sectors. To me, they don't have the monopoly just because they are the bigger groups. I feel there is a unique opportunity to be creative and visionary, and if we keep our children and our families at the centre, then we have a better chance of making decisions that will be right for the future well-being of Northern Ireland. There is no doubt that sharing is good and that there are many ways of sharing. But some sharing has more productive outcomes than others, and the aim should be to work towards the very best possible outcomes. Many of the proposed models for sharing are about schools working together and young people joining together for lessons or time-bound projects, and this is no doubt a very good first step on the journey. However, I feel we need to be very careful because there is a very, very real danger that the end result could be a low level of sharing, which in effect would really mean that we end up maintaining division, not ending it. So here are a few questions to consider. Why does it look like we are being steered towards accepting time-limited occasional contact when we could have so much more? How will then we meet the needs of those families where the parents are from mixed marriages or relationships, other world faiths or none? And who often end up forced into a controlled or a maintained school because of the shortage of places in integrated schools, where often those families feel more at home. Why has there never been even one Department of Education planned integrated primary or post-primary school, despite the fact that the Education Reform Northern Ireland Order 1989 states that integrated education should be encouraged and facilitated? It has never really been encouraged. It has never been on the agenda to actually actively work. Parents have had to work really hard, or the control schools that have transformed have had to make difficult decisions to get their school to integrated status. And to be honest, I am struggling to have faith that there will ever be one, given that the process for area-based planning has been driven by the Education Library Boards and CCMS. I find it hard to understand why, if we are committed to planning for the school estate and that the remit is about the shared future, it is considered appropriate to deny our sector a place at the table. We don't have a place at the table. The legislation is not there for us to have a place at the table. We will be consulted. There is a remit for consultation, but that's all that's going to happen. So the process is happening really without our sector, which seems crazy to me. And if we're really about sharing and we're really about having everybody together at the table to discuss for everybody, why can't we co-opt our sector and the Irish Medium, which I think is in the same situation, if there isn't time to change the legislation? So are the powers that be hiding behind legislation and using it as an excuse to keep us away from the table? If we put children first and not institutions and manage somehow to not stick rigidly to recreating another slightly modified version of our present education system, then I firmly believe that in this context, it is crucial that the number of integrated schools continues to increase. Why are our integrated schools oversubscribed? Why do all the surveys done state that there is a desire for integrated education? What are integrated schools offering which is so popular? Could it be that the parents of today and of the future are more ahead in their thinking than of those who will be making the decisions? So let's take a look at the model I am privileged to lead as principal of an integrated nursery and primary school, a model which I feel is much richer than anything which is time-limited or occasional in terms of children and young people being together. For 7 years in an integrated primary school, the children and their parents, because at primary school level, the parents are coming into school every day and collecting children every day. That doesn't happen at secondary level. So at primary and nursery school, that is happening. So that whole sharing is much richer. Through the curriculum and special events, they learn about each other. They are first and foremost friends with each other. And in the early years, we do many activities which focus on the fact that each child is special and unique. We explore their similarities and their differences, and we celebrate both. Our school is a Christian school, but we explore with the children the main world faiths, and we also work at developing understanding and respect for those families who have no particular faith or who come from other cultures. And we are exploring, introducing philosophy in the school as well. In such a short time, I can only give a flavour of the opportunities we provide for all of our children to experience together. And I am emphasising together, not apart. Things which belong to, or are perceived to belong to, one or other of our two main traditions. So in our school, there will be things like Remembrance Service, Remembrance Sunday, Harvest Service, learning to speak Gaelic, and playing Gaelic football, cricket, rugby, celebrating St. Patrick's Day, Jubilee Street parties, going to Stormont for the Queen's visit, preparation for the sacraments of reconciliation, First Communion and confirmation, visit to school assemblies by ministers from all the main Protestant churches, learning to play the Celtic lyre, and I could go on and on. But round all of this is a rich dialogue and opportunities for appreciating diversity and respect which surround those experiences. Very recently, with our P5 and P6 and 7 classes, we did a workshop on the signing of the Ulster Covenant. We explored together what Belfast was like 100 years ago. The children were stunned to realise that Northern Ireland didn't exist 100 years ago. It was quite a shock to their system. And we talked about the signing of the Ulster Covenant and why they wanted to sign it, and also discussed what the Catholic community felt about the Ulster Covenant, and that they wanted home rule. I wonder how many schools marked the occasion and were able to do so with teachers and children of both traditions taking part. And what about inclusion? Now, I see inclusion, I see integration. I'll go back to integration in the wider sense. I see it as inclusion. It's about social class, it's about ability, it's about disability, it's about marginalised groups, it's about everybody. If you are what I call a real integrated school, the doors are open and everybody is welcome. So we are very proud, our school is very proud of our total commitment to all children, and we actively welcome children with significant barriers to their learning, whether that be because of a disability or those children for whom they find school really difficult. We have children who present with emotional and behavioural difficulties and find the school environment difficult, and that's throughout Northern Ireland. A truly inclusive school has to first of all understand these children and then have the ability to be empathetic and highly, highly flexible in their approach, because it is about flexibility. This is real child-centred education at its very best. And it's by no sort of mistake that we would actually in our sector have probably the highest level of children who would be considered to be marginalised, whether it's children who are looked after children, adopted children, or whether it is children with disabilities. And I mean proportionately, obviously. Also, most importantly, the school has to be committed to working in partnership with parents and outside professionals. These children and often their families are the most vulnerable in our society. There are many children who are relatively easy to include, but what about the children with more complex needs that many schools don't want? And that is a reality. We have children in our community that are massaged away from schools. It's not enough for a child to be enrolled in a school if the practice, if the leadership, if the ethos and the climate of the school is not meeting the needs of the child. To conclude, I strongly feel that new integrated schools should be planned for sensitively and where need and desire is demonstrated. I don't believe in enforcing it. I am not coming from the point of feeling that we wake up tomorrow or in 5 years' time we'll say all schools need to be integrated. But because it's far too early, we're not ready, and I agree with what some of the speakers have said, we have to work with where we are. But we can't throw the integrated schools out and move towards this model of sharing. We do need to recognise that the voices of our Catholic families and our Protestant families, who are equally proud of their own schools, also have the right to be heard and listened to. And I'm very strong about that. And I also feel I'm very aware of your I've forgotten the word for it, what you've passed this morning, your motion, I should say. You know, we maybe need to look at schools where families want to opt out of religious education. I feel they have the right. Change always takes time, and especially because here in Northern Ireland we are talking about changing hearts and minds, and it is going to be a difficult journey, but I think we need to be committed about exploring it for everybody, and especially our marginalised groups. To say about myself is I have been here, before somebody says I'm a blow-in from England, I have been here since 1978. My three children have gone through the education system here, and I have taught extensively, and I have seen the effects in, you know, I've worked in schools in France where the Portuguese and the Algerian children were in the minority and what that meant for them. I've taught in elite schools where very aristocratic families almost with highly intelligent children were educated there, but there was a small minority of children who were from a poorer social class, but were very bright, and what that meant for them to be in the minority in that setting. And I've also worked in the Steiner School here in Holywood, and in some ways probably the first integrated school in Northern Ireland, and seen that a very, very good model for child centre, which is probably where my total commitment to child-centred education comes from.
Okay, thank you, Mary. Okay, and finally, the best line is always left to last. That's Father Tim.
Thank you very much, and I thank you for your invitation to be here today. If Trevor thought he was Daniel going into the lions then, you will forgive me if I feel as the representative of the largest single faith sector, as the poor little meek lamb being led very much to the slaughter here. Not least in the light of the resolution you passed this morning. While I cannot be sure, and none of us can be sure, what everybody's view is on something like climate change in this room, particularly since we don't know the background of the other panel members on the matter, what I am absolutely certain of, on the basis of what I've heard from the panel, what I know of the arguments and everybody in this room, is I'm absolutely certain that everybody here supports the development of a peaceful, just, and reconciled society. That's what we all yearn for, and the question is, how do we achieve it? And all of those involved in the provision of education have a responsibility to constantly reflect on how they can contribute actively to that. And maybe perhaps there is always a particular responsibility on the dominant, the numerically dominant sectors, and those that are traditionally defined by a single identity. Although obviously things are not as simple as that. So I accept that there is always a challenge to the sector that I represent to reflect earnestly and with others, and to be challenged, as Tony said, by others from outside that sector about what more we need to do to contribute to that vision of a peaceful, just and reconciled society. However, what I have become less certain of, to be absolutely frank with you, about this whole conversation in Northern Ireland about a shared and integrated society is this. What are we really talking about? What I want is a normal society. I want a normal society. Why do I use the term normal society rather than these frankly sometimes hackneyed, you know, words of sharing and integration? Not that they're not valuable in themselves, but they're a little bit hackneyed at this stage in our context. Because in a normal society, I believe, yes, there's free association and ease in where we live, there's free association and ease in where we work, but in a normal society like Britain, like Scotland, like the Republic of Ireland, like most other pluralist, democratic, diverse societies, there is a diversity of provision in education. There is a diversity of provision. Euphemistically, it's described in our context as segregated. In any other pluralist, diverse democracy, it's called diverse provision. And here's the question I have to pose to you very, very frankly, in the light of your particular resolution and stance, one which to a certain degree is shared and being touted more and more by the First Minister. I have to ask you this. Is the society you're proposing in that motion a society based on rights, or is it a secular dictatorship? Is it really a diverse, tolerant society, or is it one that pretends to tolerate particular identities, even though it finds them either bewildering, rationally or otherwise, or in some other term, you know, just there and a bit of an irritation, but will put up with them? I'm asking that very, very frankly. Why do I say that? Because you need to go back and read the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and you need to read, if I may say so, the European Convention on Human Rights, both of which affirm the right of parents to have their children educated in accordance with their religious convictions. And that is one of the main reasons why faith traditions have schools and profess the right to have schools. That's one key plank in terms of a rights-based society that I will defend with my life. The second one is this, is the fundamental principle of religious freedom, as the very religious and philosophical freedom and political freedom, which are all part of that same complex of rights about identity. And you either believe in the right to religious freedom and the right of religious people to actively promote their religious view, and others of other philosophical traditions to do so as well, and where there is sufficient number to have institutions of various kinds which reflect, support, and promote that religious or philosophical worldview. I know there's a huge and an important debate to be had about, where we are as a society in relation to the number of faith-based schools versus demand for humanist or other schools. That's a very important debate, and that's more the debate that I'm interested in terms of, yes, being honest about the level and demand for diversity. And that's happening, and we're actively engaged as a church in that in the Republic. But if you're starting to tell me, and frankly it's how I hear your resolution, even if it's not intended that way, if you're telling me that religious organisations don't have a right in a pluralist, diverse democracy, a free society, to promote their religious and philosophical view and to have institutions that reflect and protect and can promote those views, then I'm afraid we're talking about two very different concepts of both freedom and rights and society. So that's my honest challenge to you. On the narrower question of, how do we contribute, as particularly people in the school and educational context, to this reconciled society? I think Tony very, very eloquently and comprehensively set out both the history of this question and its current position. And I want to say that I actually think we're in a very exciting moment in this regard, because what's not in the public domain, and Trevor didn't allude to it, for example, is this. One of the problems we have had as a Catholic Church tradition in education in Northern Ireland is people would have often asked us, particularly when the integrated concept was developing, why won't you have shared church schools as there are in England? And that's a very important question. And the answer has been that, in fact, there is no other significantly sized faith-based Christian church sector in Northern Ireland. The controlled sector is essentially a state sector with, and I'm so glad it's there, with a faith representation statutorily present within it. It's a Christian sector in that sense. Similarly, I stand to be corrected in this, I hope I'm not misrepresenting, but similarly within the integrated, the formal integrated school sector, there's a spectrum there of levels of ownership and trust and context in terms of religious or state-based schools. You know, we can't assume that the current integrated school sector, as Tony pointed out, they're actually quite autonomous, and they all have a different contour in this regard. So anyway, in the context of the ESA, the new bill, what's not very well known in the public domain, and I don't mind sharing it, I hope Trevor doesn't mind, is that in the early stages there was a real threat in the way the ESA bill was being constructed legislatively to the future role of the representatives of the Protestant churches, who handed their schools over to the state, the Northern Ireland state. By the way, and I'm sorry for being slightly provocative, you know, the Protestant churches could hand their schools over with some confidence to what was openly defined as a Protestant state. The Catholic Church actively didn't do so. In fact, in the earlier years of this particular state of Northern Ireland, we paid our own teachers and so on. We brought funds up from the Republic, things like that, to protect this precious historic right, going right back to the penal laws, etc., etc. Okay? So also remember that when you start coming out with this sort of stuff, I can also hear it as sectarian. Not necessarily as religiously sectarian, but hostile and actually aggressive towards a fundamental right that we as a community fought for and yearned for and achieved eventually in this society. But one of the things that was amended in the ESA bill was to ensure that the transferors of the controlled sector remained present and are now actually actively on the ESA in the same proportion as ourselves. And that's important because we will look at now, we will in the current context, as Tony said, we will look at the type of situation that Trevor has outlined, the controlled and the maintained primary schools in the small village. We will look at sharing across with another faith-based sector. But I'm sorry, we don't and we can't do that with a secular sector. We just can't do it. They're two completely different worldviews. But we will share with other Christian traditions as we do in England. And I think that's a very positive and exciting development. So this is the tension. It's between what is a really diverse plural society and what does it mean in terms of the rights to particular identity, the freedom of religion as a basic concept of that type of society, and the challenge of that. Or this, with respect, this very simple idea of integration, which, if I can dare quote Pope Benedict, in some respects, potentially is heard by someone like me as the dictatorship of secularism, you know, that we know best. And indeed, there's also a bit of this which is very partitionist, which is also this kind of social engineering, you know, and the big state knows best. Well, look around the world at some, not all, but some of the state systems, where particularly Catholic schools, not least in Britain, are much sought after because of the state taking over schools. There's a whole lot more I could say. I might be a little bit more provocative, but I'm not. I could be a bit more provocative about integrated schooling, but for the time being, I'll just leave it at that for the time being, having probably been quite provocative enough.
No, but thank you very much, Tim. Thank you.